Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I am Ron.
And Jean Marie will not be with us today. Today's topic is one that is changing
Who
medicine.
Are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Lita. Today's topic is one that is changing medicine fast. Artificial intelligence in medicine, with a special focus on robotics.
And our guest is Dr. Sanjeev Kumar, who's going to help us understand where AI-driven robotics is already making a difference, where it is headed, and what patients should know about it. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Well today, thank you.
So I guess robotics is really one of the most exciting areas in modern healthcare. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, robotics is rapidly evolving and one of the major advancements in the field of medicine and field of surgery. Basically, what is a robot? A robot is something, it's like a machine that can do the same task over and over and over again without being tired. So that's the definition in the broader sense of the robot. Now, in how's the robotic technology applying in surgical fields where I gained expertise is basically utilizing surgical robots in performing operations in humans. So I specialize in robotic surgery in women's cancers, like endometrial cancer, gynecologic cancers, ovarian cancers, things of that nature, where we operate with help of a machine. And there are a lot of different types of robots available. The one that I'm most familiar with is Da Vinci robotic technology made by Intuitive Surgical. Okay. So that's kind of like a broad overview of this technology.
Okay. I actually had a surgery done by a Da Vinci machine.
Oh, really?
So
oh,
wow. I am very well aware. I had my hiatal hernia repaired by one.
Yes.
And I guess because a doctor doesn't get tired out, there's less of a chance for error, I'm assuming. Is that true?
That's exactly right. So generally, you can sit and operate rather than, you know, standing all day long. Imagine if you have 6-7 cases and then you're standing all day long and trying to operate. You tend to get tired as the day goes by, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how physically fit the surgeon is. It's inevitable that there's a wear and tear and things of that nature. But utilizing the robotic technology, it becomes feasible that human factor of fatigue is minimized.
But the surgeon is still operating the machine, correct?
Oh, yes. The surgeon is definitely operating the machine.
But if I remember right, they sit down during that operation?
That's correct. So the surgeon sits on the console and operates with their hands and utilizing their feet as well, controlling the machine. And then obviously there's a whole team that is next to the patient on the bedside.
Okay.
It's not that the robot is doing the operation autonomously. The robot is basically controlling everything. The control is in the surgeon's hands.
Okay. So instead of standing and moving their arms a lot in order to do the surgery, they're sitting and maybe doing just a couple of finger moves to do levers or buttons or things, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then I understand that there's also rehabilitation robots, hospital delivery robots, robotic pharmacy systems, and even robotic tools that are used in imaging and minimally invasive procedures.
Yes, so now you're talking about what, in my view, as a surgeon, are less complex robotic machines. In other words, you have these, so let's say you have these robotic workstations that are, you know, rolling around in the hospital. They have a computer screen on top of them. They have wheels, and they go from one patient room to the next. They can record vital signs. They can bring in, you know, a translation service if the patient is Spanish speaking, for example.
Nice.
So they can translate on the spot. And then you have other functions that will normally be done by a nurse or a nursing auxiliary of dispensing medications. That's where you were talking about robots related with the pharmacy operation, things of that nature. So
yeah, I know I've seen a couple walk around or wheel around in the hospital. I wasn't sure what they were doing.
Yeah, and I've heard, although I've not seen one, but I've heard that there are similar robots now being deployed in restaurants as well, that they can take your orders and, you know, translate the menu and dispense food to you in the restaurant.
Well, there goes waiters.
Well, I've actually seen that at the drive-through.
Okay.
Where, and I'm not, I'll be honest, I'm not a huge fan of that right now. I'm a little slow into really endearing it. But even at the drive-through, I mean, it acted like a person with questions I had and things like that. It was able to respond just the same way, similarly like a human would. So, again, it's more allowing myself to endear myself to the future.
Ron is very slow on on uptaking new technologies. We were just having that conversation before we taped, just changing from one watch to an Apple Watch, and it's too much for him right now. Well, let's get back to the operating room. So I guess the operating room is a whole ecosystem with some robots helping doctors perform the delicate procedures. Some can help nurses and hospital staff to save time, and some can help patients recover mobility, and some help laboratories and pharmacies work more efficiently. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And actually, going back to the Apple Watch, I have literally done thousands of robotic surgeries myself, but I still don't have an Apple Watch, and I don't know how to operate one.
Oh. Thank
right.
you.
All right. Now I see where we're going.
That's right. So I'm right with you on that. Is that the robotic technology is basically encapsulated in different gadgets, right? And the fact that you are familiar with one doesn't mean that you know it all. We are all learning and improving by the day. My particular expertise is in actually doing robotic surgery in the operating room. And as you must have experienced when you had your hiatal hernia operation, if it was a traditional operation, you will get a long incision and you will stay in the hospital at least for 3 to 5 days. And your healing time will be much, much longer, and infection rate will be higher. And robotically, I bet you probably went home the same day, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right. And because I had one done traditionally a year before the robotic, I do understand both of the scenarios. I was in the hospital for 3 days with the regular surgery. I had a bigger scar, and the robotics, I had little holes And I was able to go home the same day. So you're right on everything.
Yeah, yeah. Also, what happens robotically is that the surgeon's view is magnified several fold. So let's say 6 to 10 times magnification, where you can actually see the blood vessels that normally you will not see with the naked eye.
Wow.
And the fact that you can actually see that, you can preserve that. If you don't see it, you can't preserve it, right?
Right, right, right.
And imagine there are very, very tiny little nerves that pass through. And if you can see those robotically, you can preserve them so that your gastrointestinal function is not impaired.
Whereas trust me, I wish my Da Vinci would have caught that before my vagus nerve was damaged.
See, there you have it right there.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's a new technology, and I'm sure that the doctors are going to get used to this, and there'll be a couple of hiccups on the way, but. Yeah. Let's talk about the most familiar. Oh, well, we already did talk about that. How robotics play a role in surgery.
But I think we were going to, you know, looking at the AI, where a lot of people think that it replaces the surgeon, but no, as doctor was saying, the doctor is still in control, but the AI allows that doctor to enhance their work.
Yes.
Right, right. So how is AI being used in surgery? We understand the robotics part, but is that the same thing, or is AI a completely different segment of this?
Yeah, it's not completely different segment of it. It's interwoven within the robotic technology. I'll give you some examples of how AI is being used in robotic surgery. So when a robotic machine is being operated, everything is connected to the computer. And think of it like a computer brain, right? So when you're doing a particular operation, let's say a hysterectomy for removal of a uterus that has a tumor, all these machines are actually connected to a common platform, and when thousands of these operations are being done, the robotic machine captures the different time it is taking during different portions of the surgery. So if you have 1,000 surgeons operating for a particular operation, the machine basically stores all the data that who is taking how much time during which part of surgery. And during which part of the surgery was the bleeding more pronounced versus less pronounced. And it can plot statistically for you as to where the risk of the surgery is most pronounced. So think of it as like a Google map, okay? And just like the Google map started very, very simple, but now pretty much you can tell where there's a traffic jam ahead of you because more and more cars are moving slower than you. Similarly, using AI, it is now becoming feasible to understand that, okay, in hysterectomy, during this step, most people encounter some sort of difficulty, so you gotta be super careful and diligent during this step.
Okay, well, that really makes sense. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the hysterectomy. What other kinds of procedures out there most benefit by using
AI and robotics?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the procedure that was first mastered by robotic surgeons was a removal of a prostate gland, prostatectomy. Okay. You know, prostate cancer is very common. It is generally understood that a man, if lives long enough, is going to get prostate cancer. It's just a matter of time. It is so common. And with age, the risk of prostatic cancer increases, right?
Yeah.
So much so that probably when as men we are in the 80s and 90s, a lot of us have some sort of prostate cancer growing in us, whether it's like a frank cancer or whether it's like pre-cancer. So that was the operation that was first mastered. And the reason is prostate gland is like one limited localized area in the pelvis, which was traditionally difficult to get to because it is fairly deep in the pelvis. And it was this the operation where urologists took the lead in application of robotic surgical technology. Now, the corollary to prostatic gland in females is the uterus, right?
Right, right.
So then hysterectomy was probably the second most common operation that was mastered by the surgeons around the world. So those two operations are pretty, you know, dead set right now, that anytime you go and you're having a prostatectomy or a hysterectomy in the US, it's likely that it will be done with a robotic technology. Still, there are some open operations happening. Still, some people are using what we call them as straight stick laparoscopy, but those are disappearing rapidly, and increasingly robotic technology is being applied. Then you have now robotic technology that is expanding in other areas, such as removal of appendix, removal of a gallbladder, cholecystectomy, and as you mentioned, hiatal hernia, so hernia surgeries. And then in orthopedics, you have robotic assistance that usually is given during knee replacement and things of that nature. So those are the operations. As a general rule, operations that do not require moving different parts of the body, operations that are done typically in a localized area of human body, are more amenable in application of robotic technology.
Okay. What about like heart surgery?
Heart surgery as well is increasingly being done with robotics. I have a dear friend who's a heart surgeon who uses robotic technology extensively, actually.
Okay, all right.
So is it, okay, go ahead.
I was going to ask one quick question. The Da Vinci machine obviously must be one of the most expensive machines in the hospital, and I can't imagine that a hospital would have too many of them. So doing all these surgeries and lining up for time on them must be a little bit chaotic. Do you foresee them coming down in price and having more and more in one hospital?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Seems like you might have had some experience in the hospital, because this is such an intelligent question that goes in the heart of the like the scheduling minutia, as we call it.
Right.
Yes, robotic machines are very expensive right now. It could cost anywhere from $1.5 million to $2.5 million per
wow.
machine. And being that expensive, you can imagine each hospital has one or two. I worked in one hospital that has four.
Oh, wow.
But that is a hospital that is a rare example. But imagine typically hospitals have one or two. And that means that all the surgeons from different specialties are limited in gaining access to that machine. And the bookings happen, you know, well in advance. And many times, actually, if the operation is urgent, you want to use the robotic technology and somebody else is already using it, so that patient is just out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
As more and more companies are starting to build these robots, the cost is coming down for sure.
Mm-hmm. Competition.
Yes, competition, open market, but mm-hmm. it is still a painfully slow process.
Okay.
For example, when I was in residency in 2009-2010, there was this talk of other entrants in this market other than Da Vinci, which basically has enjoyed great monopoly. People were saying that, hey, you know, more companies are coming in and we are going to have different surgical robots. We'll be able to access them with more ease.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are in 2026. It still hasn't happened, approximately 20 years later. So, yeah, it is a tremendous advantage to use this technology, but access is definitely still very limited. It is not widely available. Also, you have to think about the staff, because it's a complex technology. Training takes time. And it's often that you have to train the entire staff. They have to know where the robotic controls are, just like you were talking about the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. I myself don't even know where the controls of the Apple Watch are. And if the staff doesn't know where the controls of the robotic machine are, then they're pretty non-functional. They can't help you even if they want to. So at 3 or 4 o'clock in the hospital, when the well-trained robotic staff goes home, because they came in at 6 a.m., started surgeries at 7, 7:30, their shift generally will end at around 3 or 4. And after that, you know, if an emergency case shows up in the emergency room, then it's hard to get well-trained staff. And that is a problem, that is a very, very practical problem that is limiting the access even today.
Gotcha. That does make sense. That actually begs another question, though. With everything being said, and you mentioned earlier that, you know, some hospitals have one or two, would you say that this is still emerging, or is this something that is like, I don't even know how to put it, does every hospital have one? Because again, this seems like it's still, to me, it seems like it's still kind of emerging.
It is still, actually, in my mind, it is like a Nokia phone, if you will. And then you had the advent of the iPhone, and then you had the evolution of the iPhone. So the technology is still fairly rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
There's much more advancement to be made. Right now, what is also happening is telesurgery utilizing robotics. So you have these surgeons who are operating at remote locations. Remember, originally robotics in surgery were intended to provide surgical services in space or in the battlefield from the ships. Yes, so that was the original intention. Robotic technology originated with the original Department of Defense funding several decades ago. And the idea was that if there's a soldier that is injured
mm-hmm.
in the battlefield and you can't dispatch a surgeon, the surgeon is sitting in the aircraft carrier or somewhere close to a land operation, right? Then they, mm-hmm. through the surgical robotics, can control the bleeding, treat the injury. Or let's say if you have an astronaut who developed mm-hmm. appendicitis while they are on a space mission, right now you're stuck, right?
Right.
You can't help them and can become catastrophic. So that was the original intent. But then the civilians obviously got hold of the technology mm-hmm. and ran with it. And it now finds its application tremendously in improving the day-to-day medical care. For example, when I was in OBGYN residency, we routinely would have, let's say, 20 to 30 patients to round on in the hospital. because they were being operated during the week, and during the weekend we'll have a lot of patient load. But right now, there's hardly anybody left because everybody's getting robotic surgeries and going home the same day. It's so much better for the patients.
But the machinery itself, I have seen these things. I was in the operating room with one. They're huge.
Oh yes.
How would that correlate with battlefield surgery or spaceship surgery, where space is a commodity in itself?
Yeah. So you had your operation this year or last year?
Last year.
Last year. So actually, if you think that the machine is huge, the version that was there last year, imagine how the machine looked 10 years ago. Because
It would be the size of a floor.
well, it's just like when computers came
Right,
out,
right.
they
That,
were,
yeah,
yeah.
computers took over the size of a building, and now it's back to that. But anyway.
So, well, the questions I have, is this being used like with NASA or on the battlefield? You said that was its original intent, but I mean, you don't hear anything about that in the news about, you know, somebody having surgery done this way,
Right.
you know, in a war or in a conflict. Is it being utilized in that manner?
Remember that was predicated on telesurgery. Telesurgery
Okay.
meaning that the surgeon is sitting, literally hundreds of miles away, and surgery is being done at a different location. That was the original intent of robotic
Okay.
surgery. Telesurgery has not caught up yet.
Okay.
But it is making more progress in other countries like India, Japan, where telesurgery is happening more and more frequently. In America, the regulation is a little bit more strict, and telesurgery still has not taken up yet. But when it does, I'm sure it will be feasible
Okay.
to have those applications.
So I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I wanted to go back to that one. I wanted to ask it a little bit more clearly. When you're talking about hospitals having one or two of these machines, there's a lot of hospitals out there.
Yeah, there are.
I find it hard to believe, so I'm just going to ask. Do a lot of these hospitals, do many, most of these hospitals have at least one?
Yeah, I would imagine today in America, it'll be hard to find a hospital that actually doesn't have one.
Okay. No, I mean, we
Because.
have a ton in larger populated cities and things like that, it would obviously make more sense. But in rural communities or where, you know, you don't have a great deal of hospitals just from a funding standpoint. But what you're saying is you think it's pretty commonplace now for most hospitals to have at least one.
Yeah, so some of the rural hospitals, smaller, especially very small hospitals, may not have it, mostly because they don't have the surgeon who could use it.
Understood.
But most hospitals out there do have the machine. And one common reason in my experience is that patients now want robotic surgery. They know that they can recover faster. There's enough education and information out there. So it's almost like a patient retention tool that a patient will think that, hey, you don't have the robot, so I might go next door, or I might drive, 1 hour or half an hour to a hospital that does have robotic technology. And so it's almost like a marketing a requirement in today's world to have robotic technology. Also, robotic technology and the presence of the robot now is kind of like a marker of your hospital moving on with the times.
Well, Dr. Google Dr. Google says that there are 4,000, it exceeds, there are more than 4,000 units in the United States and more than 11,000 units worldwide.
Very believable. I would believe that, yes.
Yeah. And they're replacing, the larger hospitals are replacing older systems with newer Da Vinci platforms, just like everybody wants a new iPhone. Maybe they'll give the old Da Vincis to different hospitals.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, once you get, once you develop a robotic program and instill the skill set in your staff and start catering to patients, and once you actually realize and see the benefit of the technology, then it is hard to go back. Then
right,
you're
right.
going to sort of start replacing the older units with the newer ones, and the iPhone cycle will start. That's what I've seen.
Okay, okay. Well, let's get away from surgery just for a minute and switch to rehabilitation. Ron and I are both recreational therapists, so we kind of, you know, this is our area. Can you see robotics being powerful and used in rehabilitation?
I don't do rehab myself, but I totally foresee massive application of robotics in rehab because, you know, I'm just, you know, thinking here loudly, thinking loud. Let's say you have a shoulder joint or a knee joint that you want to rehab, and there are certain movements you want to produce. I totally foresee that people making these robotic braces where you feed in a particular setting and the machine then helps the person to make those movements. I totally foresee that. I don't know to what extent, maybe you guys should teach me as to what extent.
Well, there's a really big famous rehab center in Chicago, the Shirley Ryan
Ability Lab,
and they use robotic exoskeletons. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And what are those? What are robots?
They attach to the body. Like, let's say somebody had a stroke and they lost movement in part of their body. These attach to the body and help them
move that body part.
Move the body part in order to get blood going there and, you know, acting as if it was being utilized, and maybe even using a TENS unit built in so that they can have the nerve stimulation as well.
Yes.
We kind of hope that the rehabilitation robotics takes off like a shot, because we really have a lot of people that, it seems like stroke is a very common injury nowadays.
Oh, big time. I mean, look, also, as we are aging, you know, our population is aging, right?
Yeah.
So everything that is a problem with aging is more frequent. So stroke, you know, you have heart attacks, you have cancers, obviously increasing more and more, definitely.
Okay. We're kind of grasping at straws here. In that realm, I think AI would be able to analyze how a patient moves, how much force they use, where they struggle, and how they can improve over time. And then the system can adjust the therapy intensity or suggest modifications. And that way it's personalized medicine and it can make rehab more efficient and motivating. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, big time, big time. I think that's gonna be like a smart rehab.
Right. Well, we're looking forward to that.
Yes, rather than like a generic program, I think using the AI and robotics, you can produce much more tailored approach to rehabbing an individual. I agree with that.
Right, but now in that same sentence. Do people worry that robots will make healthcare feel less human?
That's certainly a worry about everything related to robotics, right? And AI is there was a clip floating around many months ago where Elon Musk was saying that the humanoid robot, I'm forgetting its name, the kind that he makes, Optimus, I think he was talking about
I think it
Optimus.
is, yes.
Yeah, so he was saying that Optimus robot is going to replace human surgeons within next 3 years, and that
Wow.
it will be better than any human surgeon ever lived within 3 years.
And
So
that's his goal, huh?
well, I don't know if this is the platform to say it, but whatever he says, I take with a grain of salt. I struggle with.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to be one of the first patients.
No, not at all.
I
And
can picture those rocket ships blowing up on
no,
the
it's. I mean, it's nice to know. I mean, it's not a slight against doctors, but again, fatigue obviously can be a factor. But in reality, there is no replacing humans in surgery or something like that. Enhancement, yes, but replacement, in my belief, no. I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it other than, just, using a scalpel or putting sutures or I don't know. It's very concerning that.
Should let a robot do it all?
Yeah, you have a highly specialized doctor and then have a robot do that instead. I don't know. I just struggle with that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I what I think is as time goes by, there will be more and more assistance from the technology. But I don't foresee yet how a completely autonomous robot can do a complete operation by itself. And mainly because every human being is different, every disease process is different. Even though you may have the same operation, but it's every surgery literally is a combination of thousands of different steps that human surgeons perform without even thinking. And to teach a machine to basically modify according to the situation or to have the judgment. Judgment is the main issue here, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And that's why I went on my little rant. I mean, I'm all for enhancing,
Augmenting.
augmenting. I even utilize it somewhat in my job, and that's great as an augmentation, but certainly not as a complete replacement. And just another like example, driving. When you've been driving 20, 30, 40 years or more like we have, you instinctfully know something is going to happen or instinctfully know that you need to do something depending on the situation. And that's just because of your experience. And like you said, every situation is different. So that's where I got my little rant about struggling with what he says about replacement.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
I mean, in all honesty, the evolution of technology is probably beats our imagination every time, both in a negative as well as positive way, right? So when you look at autonomous driving, for example, when originally the concept was floated, people didn't believe it at all. And then it was said that, oh, by 2018, every car will be self-driving. However, we now see cars that self-drive and are more accepted than, let's say, 10 years ago, right?
True.
So it's like baby steps, progress.
No, you're 100% right with that. But we also just saw in the news where in, I think it was in Atlanta, Georgia, There were a slew of these autonomous cars just driving in circles in a subdivision. And in another instance where there was emergency vehicles performing emergency work, and these autonomous cars could not grasp that, and they created a traffic jam, which was dangerous for the medical, I think it was a medical situation that was happening. So yes, yeah, I mean, you are right that things get better over time, but again, I just threw out a couple of different examples, but right now there's still bugs that need to be
worked out,
corrected.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, big time. And surgery, honestly, is probably way far behind and way more complex than even the self-driving concept. Just the idea of a robot putting a scalpel or a knife on my body just gives me, like, you know, shivers. Nope, not happening. So, you know, there's a lot to be improved upon before that happens, at least in my humble opinion.
Okay. So I hear you saying that robotics guided by AI can make healthcare more precise, efficient, and accessible while supporting clinicians rather than replacing them.
100%. And you know, in different fields, a lot of good things are happening. For example, I'll give you a few specific examples, like the capability already is there that now, while you're operating, you can actually see a patient's CT scan or an MRI image as you're operating using AI. And you can compare it to, you know, previous images. If a tumor that is growing, you can try to nail down exactly where it is all going in the body. Those things are already available and are happening. So a lot of different improvements. I mentioned tailoring the robotic time and real-time training and information provided to the surgeons that, hey, you know, during this step, most of the mishap happened during this step. So you gotta navigate it carefully. So that is also happening. So these are just two very, very concrete examples.
Mm-hmm. No, that's some absolutely great information. So doctor, before we wrap up, is there anything I should say that patients should keep in mind if they are looking to have a surgery and they find out or hear that the hospital does use robotic technology?
Yeah, usually patients should definitely check, because robotic technology generally means that the operation will happen in a minimally invasive fashion.
Okay.
Smaller incisions, which automatically means less tissue trauma, quicker recovery, less blood loss, less infection, earlier return to work, lower complication rate. The surgeon can see better. It removes the human tremors mostly, and takes the human fatigue factor out of the equation to a large extent. So with all these benefits, patients should definitely check before, if they're anticipating having any surgery, whether, number one, the surgery can be done robotically. Number two, if the you know, potential surgeon is trained in robotic technology, and if the hospital possesses the robotic machines, if one hospital doesn't, then, you know, it's prudent to look for different other hospitals.
Okay.
So patients should feel curious but not intimidated by them.
Oh yeah, big time. I mean, there's nothing to be intimidated by it. It's something that they should take advantage of.
Okay.
It's the same, you know, if you're going to work, would you rather walk or take a car? Generally, take a car, right? So it's the same concept.
Okay.
Well, Dr. Kumar, this has been an incredibly helpful interview. Robotics in medicine can sound futuristic, but you've made it very practical.
Thank you. You're kind. And why don't you share with us your own experience with the hiatal hernia surgery? And sounds like you had both. You had open and then you had robotic.
Correct.
Which one is better? Correct. And how different it was?
Yeah. Well, the first one, I didn't know I was going to have to compare it. The first one failed, which is why I had the second one the next year. And the first one, I was miserable. I mean, my daughters told me that, you know, my couple of days in the hospital afterwards, they had never seen me recover so poorly. And then when I had the robotic surgery the next year, I mean, I really could have gone out and played golf, and I don't play golf. The recovery was like nothing.
Wow. So see, you have it right there.
Yeah, like it was very healthy for me.
Yes.
Well, I think that's a great place to end, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for
the opportunity. I'll send you links when the episode is ready to post, and you can share the links with whoever you'd like. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delaying seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.